Mike brought the hawking mat in from the east toward first sight. The flight had taken over an hour in the dark, and I had spent most of the time huddling from the wind and waiting for the carpet to fold up and tumble us both into the sea. We were still half an hour out when we saw the first of the Motal Isles. Racing before the storm, tree sails billowing, the islands sailed up from their southern feeding grounds in seemingly endless procession. Many were lit brilliantly, festooned with colored lanterns and shifting veils of gossamer light. "You sure this is the way?" I shouted. "Yes," shouted Mike. He did not turn his head. The wind whipped his long black hair back against my face. From time to time he would check his compass and make small corrections to our course. It might have been easier to follow the isles. We passed one, a large one, almost half a kilometer in length, and I strained to make out details, but the isle was dark except for the glow of its phosphorescent wake. Dark shapes cut through the milky waves. I tapped Mike on the shoulder and pointed. "Dolphins!" he shouted. "That's what this colony was all about, remember? A bunch of do-gooders during the Hegira wanted to save all the mammals in old Earth's oceans. Didn't succeed." I would have shouted another question, but at that moment the headland and First Sight Harbor came into view. I had thought the stars were bright above Maui Covenant. I had thought the migrating islands were memorable in their colorful display. But the city of First Sight, wrapped about with harbor and hills, was a blazing beacon in the night. Its brilliance reminded me of a torch ship I once had watched while it created its own plasma nova against the dark limb of a sullen gas giant. The city was a five-tiered honeycomb of white buildings, all illuminated by warmly glowing lanterns from within and by countless torches from without. The white lava stone of the volcanic island itself seemed to glow from the city light. Beyond the town were tents, pavilions, campfires, cooking fires, and great flaming pyres, too large for function, too large for anything except to serve as a welcome to the returning isles. The harbor was filled with boats, bobbing catamarans with cowbells clanking from their masts, large-hulled, flat-bottomed houseboats built for creeping from port to port in the calm equatorial shallows, but proudly ablaze with strings of light this night, and then the occasional ocean-going yacht, sleek and functional as a shark. A lighthouse set out on the pincer's end of the harbor reef threw its beam far out to sea, illuminated wave and isle alike, and then swept its light back in to catch the colorful bobbing of ships and men. Even from 2 kilometers out we could hear the noise. Sounds of celebration were clearly audible. Above the shouts and constant susurration of the surf rose the unmistakable notes of a Bach flute sonata. I learned later that this welcoming chorus was transmitted through hydrophones to the passage channels, where dolphins leaped and cavorted to the music. "My God, Mike! How did you know all of this was going on?" "I asked the mainship computer," said Mike. The hawking mat banked right to keep us far out from the ships and lighthouse beam. Then we curved back in north of First Sight, toward a dark spit of land. I could hear the soft booming of waves on the shallows ahead. "They have this festival every year," Mike went on, "but this is their sesquicentennial. The party's been going on for 3 weeks now, and is scheduled to continue another 2. There are only about 100,000 colonists on this whole world, Merrin, and I bet half of them are here, partying." We slowed, came in carefully, and touched down on a rocky outcropping not far from the beach. The storm had missed us to the south, but intermittent flashes of lightning and the distant lights of advancing isles still marked the horizon. Overhead, the stars were not dimmed by the glow from First Sight just over the rise from us. The air was warmer here, and I caught the scent of orchards on the breeze. We folded up the hawking mat and hurried to get into our harlequin costumes. Mike slipped his laser pen and jewelry into loose pockets. "What are those for?" I asked as we secured the backpack and hawking mat under a large boulder. "These?" asked Mike, as he dangled a Renaissance necklace from his fingers. These are currency, in case we have to negotiate for favors.
Favors?
Favors, repeated Mike. A lady's largesse, comfort to a weary spacefarer. Nookie to you, kid. Oh, I said, and adjusted my mask and fool's cap. The bells made a soft sound in the dark. Come on, said Mike. We'll miss the party. I nodded and followed him, bells jangling, as we picked our way over stone and scrub toward the waiting light.